Hey there, John McWhorter.
Hi, Glenn, on this Sunday afternoon. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good.
We watched...
Presidential debate number one.
A debate. So finally one has happened. What do you think?
Well, I'm glad we're going to be having these conversations. You and I are going to be talking after each of the presidential and the vice presidential debate, and I think it's a good tradition that we're inaugurating here.
Yeah, this is going to be fun.
So high stakes indeed, and you could have the drama, the atmosphere was so charged you could have cut it with a knife. It seemed to me.
Yep.
And I don't know what the viewership was officially, but scores of millions. And there they were in the same space. I mean, I was taken by, I don't know, the physicality of it all. I mean, you know, the fact that they were, you know, they were these emblems of, you know, these kind of, they're not just symbols, of course, they're real things, but I'm just saying they're standing in for so much. That's
definitely
in conflict in our society. This campaign's been going on for so long, and the intensity of the things that are being flung back and forth, both by the campaigns and by everybody else.
Yep, and the drama that happened last week with the bailout and McCain.
You know, the financial thing, and you know, we could talk about that if we were talking about that. But you know, I was on the edge of my chair.
You know, it was actually I don't know why this was, given all that I've written and said here on Blogging Heads Included about Obama and the color of his skin and what that meant, but that was the first time that I truly felt in my gut a combination of being stunned and being happy, and happy in a way that's kind of primitive but still just there, that the man debating McCain, the man who is applying to be president, is black. It hit me. Seeing the contrast, I think, between him and McCain, who in so many ways is so very, very white. To see that we've gotten to the point.
John, I'm very troubled. I think I might be in the company of Shelby Steele here. I'm very troubled with your emphasis on this blackness and whiteness. I mean, well, can we plumb the depths of that a little bit?
Can you really honestly say that as an American, and especially one who isn't white yourself, living in 2008, that just watching the visuals of that when it started, it didn't strike you a little bit that the man who was walking out was not white? It's just the first time. It was stunning. I don't think about it in the way that I think a lot of black Obama fans think about it. And I'm the one who came out
I came out
of the starting gate saying, let's look at him as a person. But still, something did get me when they both walked out like that.
I'm not going to say I didn't notice it. I have confessed here before to feeling some excitement about, you know, the co-racialist aspect of it. And at a, I don't know, political aesthetics or some level, there is something cutting against the grain about it, but
and then you
I just I think it wants to be examined. I don't want to go with that feeling too easily. I want to say what do we think is really behind that? Because if you allow that, you know, for example, if you allow some kind of deep twinge, tingly excitation, sense of profundity to that, then that is a cousin to a lot of other racially charged feelings felt by blacks and whites and others as well.
Yeah.
Feelings when, I don't know what, someone's being executed for a capital crime, or when we're grappling with the sort of grimy underside of our industrial society, the failures and the pathology. You know, I mean, in other words, I don't want to allow a racial thing to go ungoverned and just to run wild in me. I mean, just because it happens to be on the positive side in this case, something like that. I just wonder what you think about it, because really I'm not against what you're doing or saying. I'm just kind of uncomfortable.
You know, and I don't want to agree with you too much, because we're supposed to be going
like Obama did with it.
Yeah, exactly. The exact thing. One of the things he did wrong, too much of it to his detriment. But let me refine. I get a little bit itchy when I read the column that gets written now about every 48 hours by some very well-intentioned black writer, where it's clear that they're cheering Obama on as a black man primarily, and that his views would have to be Clarence Thomas's before they'd consider not supporting him. And what they're thinking, I think, and this is consistent with the sorts of views that I'm known for, they're thinking, that could be me. Like, racism isn't so bad for me, the white man can't get me down so much because look, they let one of me up there. For me, it's not that. It's more national. I do look at race in this country as a problem. I think it's a problem for many reasons that I think a lot of the black commentariat disagree with me about. But still, I do think of it as a problem. And so when I saw a black man striding out, I thought, wow, it's evidence that we have come a long way. Not me bouncing on the couch with my popcorn and pumping my fist and just thinking, you know, way to go, brother. For me, that's too tribalist, and I think it exaggerates the extent to which white people don't like black people. Does that make sense?
No, well, yes, I understood every word you said, I believe.
Hmm.
But no, I don't agree.
No,
I don't think it's sensible at the end of the day. I mean, I hesitate here because I don't want this to be understood as a partisan comment in any way. That is to say, as a comment that is meant to cut against Obama. But, you know, he has had to run away from the black community.
Mm-hmm.
You understand
mm-hmm.
that? Jeremiah Wright, South Side of Chicago, I won't belabor the point.
Mm-hmm.
He's had to run his campaign away from the black community.
Mm-hmm.
He's had to be black in a virtual, theoretical,
mm-hmm.
symbolic sense.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a substantive... He hasn't been able to get too close to the NAACP. He hasn't allowed those black inflections to get have too much range.
Mm-hmm.
In his rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do not mean this as any criticism of the candidate.
Mm.
I am simply stating what I see to be the fact.
Yeah.
So now, if I cooperate with you
mm-hmm.
in this celebration of the political aesthetic shock value of a dark-skinned person standing opposite the conservative candidate in a national contest, he's our gladiator of the progressive forces in the society fighting over and against
well put.
The you-know-who's.
Right, that's what I mean.
You know, if I allow myself to enter in there with you and to celebrate his blackness, in a way, I'm too running away from the black community. In the sense that I would be saying it's okay, the shame of blackness in this society, the stigma, the subordination, I understand that we have to go along with it. And I therefore I want not to see it in racial terms. Do you see where I'm coming with this at the end of the day? I want not to invest Obama with too much racial significance because I don't want to participate in this fraud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not the Democrat versus Republican contest.
Mm-hmm.
The fraud that there's some deep and profound racial transformation happening
mm-hmm.
when in fact the race emblem is being worn in a very cautious way
mm-hmm.
and kept at distance from its authentic
mm-hmm.
root.
Yeah. In a way...
Take that, John McWhorter.
I understand that, but in a way, that's good. In a way, that's what I am celebrating, that this human being, this competent human being, is out there doing what human beings in his position are supposed to be doing. And look at this, he happens to be a black human being, and damn it, he has gotten that far. So take that, tribalist people. I think that's what's inside of me. But to the extent that this is about the debate, I want to ask you, were you disturbed by the fact that he seemed so sleepy? Frankly, I thought, the whole thing came out to a draw, I think.
Did you say creepy?
No, sleepy. I found that
sleepy.
It is the worst oratorical performance I have ever seen him give. It was as if he was either sleepy or that he was suddenly extremely worried about his sound bites being taken out of context.
Is this McCain or
this is Obama? I mean,
I
thought the whole thing was a draw, but I was really disappointed by his performance. The hesitations, occasionally the stammering, the not using his smile very much. He actually seemed more uncomfortable than I would ever have expected him to be. It wasn't a fun debate to watch for me. He did not...
Well, McCain wasn't comfortable either, was he?
We didn't expect him to be. You know, McCain was the best McCain he could be, which was, you know, sparklingly mediocre. That's what McCain does oratorically. But Obama, I thought he was going to be much smoother. I thought he was going to be kind of Reagan-esque in terms of the smoothness, in terms of maybe the occasional way with a line. He seemed very uncomfortable, and I don't think he made the best case for himself. He just made a decent case for himself, which, because he was up against McCain, was okay.
Well, he, everyone is saying, past this bar of appearing presidential, mm-hmm. I mean, and some have even said, was the adult in the room, was the one who was relatively more calm in his conduct throughout this period of crisis, some have said, has been on the whole more even.
Mm-hmm.
I see what you're saying about equivocation and about a lack of a real smooth comfort. You say he didn't use the smile. That's interesting, because that would be an indicator, wouldn't
mm-hmm.
it?
He gave the smile,
person who
I think,
was
one
genuinely
time, really.
At home.
Yeah.
You know, the stakes were enormously high for for both combatants, so that a person might be unable to perform in that kind of perfectly smooth way under the circumstances, well, you might expect it. And if he had done, wouldn't it have been such a winning thing? I mean, it would have put him very far along the path if he had pulled off this thing that you imagined.
I would have liked to see, like, you doing it. Like, you, I don't think you would have been nervous, whatever was going on, just talking. That's the sort of, I actually found myself thinking when watching them, Glenn Lowry would be better at this. You know, but you're not running. And, seriously.
For many reasons that we need not dwell on here.
All of a sudden, Obama was not doing the job as well as I expected. And I was...
Well, but well enough, isn't that the question? And I mean, what about the other guy, you know?
Well, McCain is just... You know, one question that I had throughout the whole thing, and I think this is the richest aspect of it. Why wouldn't those two men look at each other? What did they find so hard about that? And what most people are making the big deal out of is that McCain wouldn't even turn to look at Obama, and there are plenty of places you can go there, but Obama clearly didn't want to do it either. What do you think was behind that?
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you. That was interesting. I remember that moment when Jim Lehrer says, you know, talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Instructs one of the candidates to address the other.
Mm-hmm. And Obama kind of made a joke of it, did it in quotes, but then he couldn't help but then turn back to the front.
Yeah, I mean, and you know... I don't know. It's easy for me to speculate about this. God, I don't know. I've never been in anything like this. But, I mean, you imagine you're fighting this person for the ultimate prize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this SOB. I mean, that's got to be what you're thinking.
Sure.
You never say it. You know,
but you're thinking.
I mean, due respect to my opponent, my erstwhile opponent, but what you're really thinking is that this SOB stands between me and
what I've been
and
fighting
doing
for.
Everything I want to do in my life.
Exactly, yeah.
And moreover, I got the right idea for the country, and this SOB wants to lead us down a rabbit hole.
Exactly.
This has got to be what you're thinking. So now you're confronted with the guy.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be polite. You got to be careful. You've been coached. It's all strategized and thought out. But nevertheless, at that moment, when you're looking eyeball to eyeball, you kind of want to reach across and grab his throat, and since you can't do that, you want to use whatever verbal skills you've got to communicate, well, I'm the better man to be president.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I mean, I don't know, McCain tried to do that in his inartful way, right? He kept saying it over and over again,
uh-huh.
This man's not ready, this man doesn't understand, this man is not, you know.
Yeah.
He kept repeating that.
Yeah.
And I think there are going to be some quarters of the, you know, society, the pro-McCain quarters, well, that'll go down all right. They'll be nodding at that.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know that he would have persuaded anybody by his constant repetition.
Yeah.
And I thought Obama had some very good moments, too. I mean, one that I think is contrary to what you're saying. When, you know, he ran down the list of the litany of what John McCain was for in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
You thought this was... You talk as if this war began in 2007.
Exactly. That was one of his better
You know,
ones.
And you were wrong.
Right.
You were wrong.
He said...
You were wrong.
To us. Yeah.
You know, that was pretty good.
You know what...
So, there were moments.
There were definitely moments. I think that the reasons that they can't look at each other are actually kind of poignant. For one thing, I think that deep down, Obama feels like if he actually looked at McCain and said, you were wrong, I think he would. I think he feels that, and I think it's because it's true that he would look like a bully. The smooth talking, good looking, and taller person, and Ivy League educated, and he's younger. And
younger,
here
yeah.
is this small, white-haired man with disabilities from the war who doesn't speak as well as him. And he would look like, it would look like a bully. And with McCain, I think he won't look at Obama because I think he feels that if he did, then he might be tarred as racist. I think that that's what it is. I don't think it's that he has such scorn for him that he won't look at him. I think that he feels like it wouldn't be right for him to turn and dress down a black man. That I'm sure that his handlers have possibly even said that. The man would never even turn around.
Know.
And I think it would look like that. If he really did dress down Obama, looking him in the eyes, it would look really, really icky to a lot of people, and it would be, you know, distorted by a lot of people, and now we have
the
internet. You don't think so?
Well, no, I don't know. I don't know if that's McCain's motive. I thought you were going to say that he would be afraid of losing his temper if he started looking at him, you know,
mm-hmm.
that he'd be afraid that the contempt would show, which may be close to what you are saying.
Maybe, yeah.
But I think for both of them, that's a danger. The idea that the contempt would show
mm-hmm.
would be damaging to either one of them.
Right.
And I think it would be damaging even if McCain were not 72
mm-hmm.
Year old, shorter in stature, and doesn't have an easy facility of all
words.
Of his physical functioning and all of his words. Even if that weren't so, I think you would want to avoid holding him in contempt. So too with McCain vis-a-vis Obama. Though I suspect that they do feel contempt toward one another. I'm sure McCain must feel that this upstart doesn't know diddly about, you know, that I've been doing this for 35 years and here's somebody who just came along.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whoever they represent, he probably puts quotation marks around the name Obama
mm-hmm.
when he thinks it, you know. Obama represents all sets of forces in society and not, you know, someone like John McCain, who's, you know, whatever.
Right.
I don't know. But I would imagine that that contempt has something he'd have to guard against showing, and that might be why you'd want to keep a distance. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Both of them have personality perception problems in terms of Obama being seen as a little bit haughty by some and McCain with the temper, etc. Although, I think this is a hypothetical thought experiment, and of course, I don't know this for sure. I think that if both of the candidates were, you know, in their mid-40s, or both of the candidates were in their mid-50s, and just taking the color out of it, I think that they would be more comfortable demonstrating that contempt to an extent by looking at one another, because it would be seen on various levels as a fair fight. I think that
Well, let me ask you this, John. I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you another. This is a slightly different thing. What difference do you think it would make? I mean, I heard Bill Clinton the other day say that he knew and he liked John McCain.
Mm-hmm.
Make of that what you will. I'm sure much has been made.
Right.
But what I want to say is, what difference do you think it would make if the candidates knew and respected each other
mm-hmm.
Than if they did not? I mean, you know, it's certainly possible for someone at the left side of center within the Democratic Party, Teddy Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
to know and respect someone at the right side of center of the Republican Party,
mm-hmm.
Orrin Hatch,
mm-hmm.
And to be friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, put the friendship aside, just the knowing and respecting, just the having been engaged,
mm-hmm.
even if at a distance, even if not always face-to-face,
mm-hmm.
but having been aware
mm-hmm.
of the other person and of the other person's activities,
mm-hmm.
and having been engaged, you know, with over some period of time.
Yeah.
I think it would make a tremendous difference.
I do too.
To the quality of their capacity to conduct a constructive and informative
familiarity
argument
sure.
about some issues.
And also to maybe have a little bit of room for slightly spiky disagreement and then have a genuine embrace at the end, as opposed to what we saw the other night, which was that Obama seems capable of that. If you see the footage of him walking over and shaking hands with McCain, McCain still can barely look at him, doesn't smile very much, and clearly does not want to be touching this man at all. And
yeah, but I don't think McCain respects him. You know, I think McCain thinks he's an empty suit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I think McCain thinks, this guy's going to be president?
And what's it,
you know?
Right.
That's what I think he thinks. I mean, he probably thinks a little bit like a lot of people think about Sarah Palin, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, with, undoubtedly without justice, I want to say if it needs to be said. But I'm just imagining what, you know, John McCain might think. I think it's very plausible mm-hmm. that he, you know, thinks the guy is not not his equal.
I was
not his peer.
Yeah, I was disappointed to see that so many of the good lines and so much of what was discussed memorably had to do with things like Iran and, you know, the threat of nuclear war and things like that, where McCain...
Well, it was a foreign policy debate.
It was, but the fact is that for reasons that were beyond anybody's control, partly because the bailout had to be discussed, and that's a domestic issue, that there was a certain amount of talk about what sort of budget we would have and what we would spend the money on. And the most disappointing thing for me was that when Obama was trying to talk about what sorts of things he would spend the money on that McCain yes. was making fun of him for wanting to spend money on, he didn't enumerate. I was just waiting for him to say, yes, I do want to spend this kind of money. I do have big plans, and that is so that we can do this, this, and this. He didn't give that list, almost as if it was this almost, I don't know, Palin-esque moment. It's as if he didn't have the list in his head, when he certainly does. He didn't seem to realize that he needed to get specific.
You know, I hear you. I think this is a recurring problem with Obama. And Peggy Noonan had a piece in the Wall Street Journal last week. Did you see it?
I think I did. Which one was it?
All by Yourself, or, you know, it was something like that. The theme of the piece was that Barack Obama stands atop the Democratic Party.
Yes. Yeah.
All alone.
Yeah.
Which is to say that, you know, given the nature of the campaign, the way that he's come, the insurgency that he, you know, mm-hmm. The political insurgency within the Democratic Party, I think that's a correct description mm-hmm. that the Obama phenomenon represents, and also the historical happenstance that he is running against the wife of the immediately previously serving Democratic president, mm-hmm. and therefore could not credit that administration unduly without indirectly crediting
exactly,
his
yeah.
primary opponent. Because of these things, his connection to the kind of life force mm-hmm. of the Democratic Party
mm-hmm. shallow roots,
going back
mm-hmm.
was abstract.
Yeah, it's formal.
Tenuous, didn't have enough meat on the bones. Clear enough.
Right.
And her recommendation, I mean, you know, it's very late in the campaign for anything like this, was that he give a series of speeches about why I'm a Democrat, where he sort of laid out his whatever. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad idea for a campaign, but I thought the diagnosis
yeah.
Had merit in it. And have felt so all the way back to, you know, the primary campaign in which, you know, the change theme and the anti-Washington and the insurgency
mm-hmm.
Led to things like, at one point during the campaign, John Edwards said something like he was criticizing Clinton because she had referred to LBJ
right.
as having gotten something done in the 60s,
right.
and Edwards called him a Washington politician,
mm-hmm.
and so forth and so on. And I thought that was so problematic for the Democratic Party that they didn't have a 50-year narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a 5-year narrative.
Yeah, it's...
You know, and so something like that. And so if that narrative were there, this is what I'm trying to come to at the end. The list would come rolling off the tongue.
Yeah.
It would come tripping right off the tongue. The specifics would flow
mm-hmm.
because they would be the natural expression of this well-articulated vision about governance.
Right.
About the role of the federal government, about the et cetera.
Like the way
this
Teddy Kennedy
would vision. I'm not saying that Barack Obama does not have a vision.
Mm-hmm.
Please,
right.
okay? Anyone who wants to say that, I'm not saying that. I just said he didn't articulate it.
Right. And
okay?
And also, it's interesting, another way you can look at it from that exact same perspective is that he didn't seem to realize that he needed to put that list forward, he seemed to assume that everybody already knew it and that therefore the point didn't have to be made. When the fact is that because he has such shallow roots in that particular late 20th century Democratic tradition, he has to score. He has to underscore exactly what he's got in mind. And then he, I don't know, it's almost like he didn't seem to realize that he was talking in terms of strategy. Listen to me, it's just like George Bush in the old Saturday Night Live sketches. In terms of strategy, he's talking to these swing voters who want to hear him put up or shut up.
Well, you know, Bill Clinton said it exactly right the other day on, I saw him on The Daily Show. He said, the formulation that I thought was so exactly correct was, he said, it's not about the people liking Obama, because there are plenty of people who like him, and that's great. It's about the other people, the ones who haven't yet committed to Obama, knowing that he likes them.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to make them know you like them.
Right.
And the way you do that is by articulating what you're going to do in very concrete terms from the very first moment that you have the opportunity to serve on their behalf in that White House.
Exactly.
You're going to get in there and you're going to do the following set of things. It's got to be said with passion. It needs to be said in very small pieces. I thought you were wise last time we talked when you said that, whatever it was, he needed slogans.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that sounds so light and insubstantial,
but
of course the slogans would be standing in for something.
I was waiting for them the other night, and
you know,
he hasn't.
You got to be concrete. You got to be specific. You got to talk small ball,
punchy,
as well as big ball. And you know, and you got to get it. You got to get it across that, man, you're going to get in there and you're going to do the following set of things, and it's going to make a difference for you. And yeah, point your finger at
and the other,
pound the podium.
That's right. And the other night, the other night we got none of that. None of it. And I'm sure that he's been reading everybody's editorials about this. Somebody must have told him.
Somebody, and they filtered
and
to him.
Somehow,
yeah.
He doesn't. And you talked about how he's got to make those people realize that he likes them. And that brings up one.
That's what Bill Clinton.
Yeah,
that's not me.
This is one other thing. I think a final thing that I want to toss out here on this.
Okay, we'll keep it short this time.
Mr. McCain, Senator McCain, struck me in that debate as somebody with very little feeling for this common man that I think that we're talking about. I mean, he's somebody I've admired in many ways for a long time, but his issues are the kind of boom, boom, boom issues. And so he cares about campaign finance reform, which is the sort of thing that's certainly important, but it's he cares about immigration. But you get the feeling, but that's
things.
Only because he's Arizona. If he were a senator from Vermont, I don't think that he cares about immigration because of a natural sense of identification with or compassion for. And yeah, then he's very concerned with pork barrel spending and these issues, and all that is very nice. But in terms of Mr. and Mrs. America and how they're feeling, and I detect that that just isn't much of an interest of McCain's, whereas it is of Obama's. And I think that it's genuine in that. He talks about Wall Street and Main Street. That was the closest he came to punchy. How important do you think it is, maybe now or maybe in general, that a presidential candidate or a president have compassion? And I'm almost done, but this is because last time we talked about whether a president needs to be an intellectual, and the idea seemed to be that most certainly not. Well, how about compassion? I don't sense that John McCain cares terribly much about people who are having problems with their mortgages. I don't think that he doesn't care at all, but it's not his thing. He wants to be in a suit talking about rather abstract, although important, issues in Washington, D.C. That's what he does. Obama is different. It's another reason that I prefer Obama. What do you think about compassion?
Well, I don't know if Obama has some powerful compassion thing, but I would grant you, I don't disagree with anything that you said about McCain. I mean, the charge of Obama being aloof and so forth, and, you know, whether or not he really can, you know. So I mean, I don't want to rehearse those. I just want to say those are out there. So I you know, let me bracket the question of just how much compassion Obama communicates and try to respond to. First of all, acknowledge what you say about the deficit with respect to candidate McCain, and then also to credit you know, your thought that this is important. That, you know, and in a way, this is what we were just saying, or at least what I was trying to quote Bill Clinton as having said a moment ago. You got to make the people know that, you know, you love them. It's not just about them loving you, you know, and as it were, feel their pain. I mean, it's a cliche, but there you are, you know. you know, that you can empathize, that you, you know, you are in touch. So yeah, it's a stereotype about McCain that he's out of touch. He just doesn't get it. It's the kind of thing you would say about a Republican who owns 7 houses and 9 cars and whatever it is, and is married to a wealthy woman and so forth. But I mean, I'm gonna, you know, just at the level of when you see him on TV and when you're talking and whatnot, what comes across and what do you get? I have to agree with you 100% that McCain comes across as a professional Washington politician who's been a wheeler and dealer for a long time and who's interested in cutting some more deals to, quote, take the country forward, close quote.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama, after all, was a community organizer not that long ago, did just finish paying off his student loans, as a matter of fact. You know, probably sees the world in a very different way, more from the bottom up is what I'm saying. And as I say this, I smile because I know my wife would be pleased to hear me saying it. She's been working on my insufficient Obama enthusiasm syndrome.
Yeah, I can imagine. My wife and I had a much quieter Hillary Obama problem months ago, but that, you know, we got past it.
But the marriage survived, didn't
it? Still going strong. But, yeah, I know. You know, actually, though, who do you think came out best in the debate, or do you think it was a draw? I think it was a draw.
Everyone is saying it was a draw. I thought Obama certainly did what he had to do, which was not be made to look somehow weak or ineffectual in the context of a discussion on foreign policy. Mm. And since, I don't know, a quarter of the debate was on domestic policy, or maybe even more, that's got to be a plus for Obama. I thought, as we've said, we've rehearsed, Obama didn't really do all that we think he's capable of doing in terms of his oratorical virtuosity and his being at comfort in making his arguments. On the other hand, I thought he had strong arguments to make. And I think McCain has basically got one card here, which is that you're going to trust this guy running the country when, you know, not that long ago he wasn't doing that much. I've been here, I'm steady, I've got a track record. Mm-hmm. And I thought McCain was effective at doing that. So I'm going to come to the draw at the end of the day here, but you know, just that's what I thought. I didn't think there was any clear victor in the debate, although I think Obama probably can breathe a sigh of relief with this one behind him. Sarah Palin and Joe Biden coming up, which, you know.
Oh, that's going to be a whole different kettle of fish. But, you know, I hope for the next debate that somebody slips Obama either a Xanax or a glass of wine. Just one before the debate, so he will just
a glass of wine. It's a very good idea.
I really, that is literally what I would counsel. But, of course, he keeps his own counsel. But
forget about it. That ain't going to happen.
I know. But why don't we do this again, as if we hadn't planned to do it? Why don't we do this again after the next debate?
Looking very much forward to it, John.
Me too. And so, Glenn, have a good rest of the Sunday night, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.